Before we do the summary of yesterday's class, Mataji has brought yesterday, when we were talking about how Vedas, Vedanta Sutra, the fifth Paradism says, absolute truth can be described, isn't it? And she said in the 11th canto, somewhere I read that it cannot be described. And she has brought the Pramana for it. In the 11th canto, 3rd chapter, 36th verse, discussion between Pippalayana and King Nimi, the Navayogendras and King Nimi, the famous conversations between Nimi and Pippalayana, Karabhajana. In these conversations, it says, neither the mind nor the faculties of speech, sight, intelligence, life, air, or other senses are capable of presenting that supreme truth. So the first point is this, in this verse, that we all accept, because the mind, words, our mind, our words, and our intelligence cannot understand, cannot describe the supreme truth. Because in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, he is Rishikesha. Rishikesha means what? He is Adokshaja. Adokshaja means beyond the senses. And our tongue is one of the sense, our mind is the sense. So we cannot do that. And clearly it is being told in the Upanishads, Nayam Atna Pravachanena Labhyo Na Medasha Na Bahuna Shrudena Yamye Vaishya Vrunute Tena Labhyas Tasses Yatna Vrunute Tanum Swam. So Upanishad says, Nayam Atna Pravachanena. Big lectures you give, big talk. Na bahuna shudena, you are memorized the entire shruti. Na medasha, you are very intelligent in presenting so many siddhantas, refuting others in argument. Na medasha, na bahuna shudena, emyevai shrunate. Krishna cannot be attained by these things. Krishna can be attained by whom? Only to those whom he chooses. Emyevai shrunate. Whom does he choose? Definitely whom he loves. Isn't it? Whom does he love? One is a devotee. So that is what is explained in this verse. Yamye vaishya vrunute tena labhyaha. For only those people he is attained. And for them, what does he do? Tasyaisya atna vivrunute tanum swam. His whole body, his personal form, he shows, reveals in front of him. So the Vedic understanding is that God reveals. God reveals. So that doesn't mean that God cannot be described. Revelation is there. But how does the revelation happen? Whatever is described about God in the Vedas, when you chant it. Go into the second point of it. Here, somebody may say, though Vedas also cannot describe. That is what is mentioned here. Nor even the authoritative sound of the Vedas can perfectly describe the supreme truth. One word is here written as perfectly. That is true. Because even God, Supreme Lord, is beyond the reach of the Vedas. In some places it is mentioned. Like Prabhupada gives in the purport. Not Prabhupada. This purport is given by Hridayananda Maharaj and his team. Taittiriya Upanishad says, the descriptive power of speech fails to reveal the supreme truth, and the speculative power of mind cannot achieve him. Now, the acharyas, because Sridharma Maharaj and other disciples of Prabhupada, they just took from commentaries of Sridhar Swami and Sri Vishnu Thakur and Vijayadutti Tirtha. But because such statements of the Vedic Shrutis are in themselves description of absolute truth, one may consider such Vedic statements contradictory. Therefore, in this connection, it is quoted, although the Vedic Shrutis forbids us to speculate on absolute truth, such restrictive injunctions indirectly constitute positive assertion of existence of the Supreme Living Entity. In fact, Vedic restrictions are meant to save one from the false path of mental speculation and ultimately bring one to the point of devotional surrender. As Lord Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, Vedesya sarve raham vedyo. By all the Vedic literatures, I am to be known. The assertion that a particular process, such as mental speculation, is useless. Like it is quoted in this verse, Yato vacho nivartante aparasya manasasaha constitutes an indirect assertion of existence of the correct path of achieving the Supreme Lord. Srila Sridhara Swami has stated, Sarvasya nididhyasasya saviditva. Every negative injunction is understood to have a specific limit. Negative injunctions cannot take as applications in all cases. For example, a negative injunction is that no living entity can be equal to or greater than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Srimad Bhagavatam states that because of the intense love or residence. For example, no living entity can be equal to or greater than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Srimad Bhagavatam states that because of intense love for the residence of Vrindavan, for Krishna, they sometimes assume a superior position. Thus, Mother Yashoda minds Krishna with ropes. And the influential cowherd boys sometimes ride on the shoulders of Krishna or defeat him in wrestling. Negative injunctions, therefore, may sometimes be adjusted according to the transcendental situation. Although the absolute truth is transcendental to the material creation, therefore beyond the scope of material senses, when those same material senses are saturated with love of God, they become spiritualized, empowered to perceive the absolute truth. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Premanjanachita Bhakti Rochanena, Santasadeya Hrudayesh Vilokayanti, Yashama Sundar Machinti Gunasarupam Govindamadu Purusham Tamaham Bhajami, Santasadeya Hrudayesh Vilokayanti, Natumam Sakshise Dushtum, Anena Sachakshusha, Divyam the Dhamite Chakshu, Pashyame Yogameshwaram, like Krishna says to Mahavitarjuna, I give the eyes to you to see. In this way, the commentary goes further and further and further. So that is why Srila Prabhupada's our books, you should not limit your study to the translations, to the purports. Like once Srila Gopal Maharaj went to Prabhupada, at that time it was not Maharaj, it was a guest. He told me personally this point that he told, it was Kumbhela, a lot of book distribution was going on. And so much of book distribution was going on, and somebody advised, if you print Bhagavad Gita, somebody advised Maharaj, if you print Bhagavad Gita, just verses and translation, you can distribute more books, because at a really cheaper cost also, then a lot of people will Bhagavad Gita and get Bhagavad Gita in their house. Maharaj got inspired with the whole thing and came to Prabhupada. And suggested and gave this idea. How about if you print, BVT can print a Bhagavad Gita with the verse and the translation without the purports. And Prabhupada became very furious and told, better don't print. Better don't print. So now when you read the purport for this, you'll understand that sometimes a negative instruction is given to limit somebody not to speculate. So there are some instructions away thus in scriptures like that. When something is told, there is a purpose behind it. That is what is explained in the entire purport, like Srila Swami says. There are certain things which are spoken so that there will be no misuse of direct things. That is when negative things are given. We discussed this point, how Upanishads talk about God doesn't have hands, doesn't have legs. Why they are spoken? Because if only direct things are given, they will be misusing it. That is why negative things are necessary. Direct things like Krishna, Shama Sundara Chintya Gunasarupam, nice, wonderful Sarupa Krishna is God. Like I gave the example of, so Krishna is so beautiful, that is, he has actually beaten my beauty today. So immediately you start comparing Krishna's beauty with you. So that people will not go into that. That is, Upanishads first describe negative things. So here there is a negative statement that God cannot be described by words, God cannot be understood by mind. Because there are some people who want to, who think that, you know, I can speculate and think about God and describe. So to restrict them doing so, such negative instructions are given. This you understand from the purport. Okay, your point is clarified. Good hard work. Okay. First, yesterday's confusion of this point has been answered. Now, to have a recap of what we did yesterday, Sankhya, we did took a long time to understand that how there are three Sankhyas and there are two Kapilas. Three Sankhyas, one is Krishna's Devayuti Kapilas and Kapilas Sankhya, and there is a distinction between them. And we understood that how Kapilas Sankhya is atheistic, Kapilas Sankhya is totally atheistic. And yesterday we did a lot of research on that, how atheistic Sankhya, what they say. What they say, in one sense, they seem to be like our own Vaishnava Siddhanta, because they talk about Satkriyavada, and also they criticize or destroy their philosophy, the philosophy of Arambhavada, and they accept Parinamavada, which we also accept. But not the Parinamavada in the way we accept, because we accept Shakti Parinamavada. They accept Prakriti transforms. And there are four chapters. One chapter describes our Prakriti, which is unconscious and active. They talk about Purusha. The second chapter talks about Purusha, which is conscious and inactive. And when they combine together, they give many examples to establish how Prakriti is necessary. Atoms are the source. And they establish that how this Shabda has to be accepted, Vedas have to be accepted, and they give so many examples that Prakriti and Purusha meet together automatically, by chance, and this is how the Vedantists describe them, what makes the Prakriti and Purusha get together. And the fourth chapter talks about how Prakriti and Purusha, they separate, and Purusha understands that whatever is in this material world is nothing but three modes, Sattva, Rajastama, and they reduce everything and anything to three modes. And they just count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, to 24 and reduce to 22, 3 modes, and they understand that 3 modes have nothing to do with me, and they become peaceful. That is called liberation according to the Sankhyas. Like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Tattavittu Mahabaho Gunakarma Vibhagayo Guna Guneshu Vartante. So they don't see Gunakarma Vibhagayo. They only see Guna Guneshu Vartante, how the modes are acting. And they are very expert in seeing how the modes are flowing. Actually, like when you see something, you don't see the modes. But the Sankhyas just see the modes only everywhere. Expert Sankhyas. And because of this reason of not accepting God, and they talk about so many things of Prakriti, Purusha and all these things. Vyasa, they say, is Vipranishedaccha Asamanjasam. Vipras, learned people, they don't want to, they are not interested in people or philosophies which don't talk about God, which don't accept God. So that is the main problem with the Sankhyas. If you take the Sankhya philosophy and just put Krishna in it, it is almost our philosophy, almost. Few changes here and there. Because they take away Krishna, Maya Dekshana Prakriti, they don't accept Prakriti is working in Krishna's instruction, Krishna's order, because of which Asamanjasam, Vyasa felt a little bit disgusted with them. That is actually the word. Asamanjasam is a little bit, not disgust also. It's an uncomfortable situation. So among those people, I feel uncomfortable. In this way, Sankhya was defeated at the end. The last point which he spoke was this. How Vyasa, in the second chapter, second pada of the 10th verse, or 10th sutra, 2 to 10, this is what it says. Asamanjasam. Now we go to yoga. Veda says something and your acharya says something. It seems to be contradictory to you. What will you accept? Yes. That's another answer for your this thing. So it seems to be something, Veda seems to say something, and your Acharya says something in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas, in the line they come and they say something, and it seems to be contradictory, then you should accept what the Acharya says. And now you have a doubt. When you have a doubt about why our Acharya told this, you should approach the sadhu and get the clarification from the sadhu. So when you get the clarification from the sadhu, then you should later explain it, that how my Acharya has explained what is mentioned in the Veda. There is no contradiction. According to one of the responsibilities of a disciple is to establish how what your Acharya has told is true and is in confirmation of the Vedas. Like many people, they said Bhagavad Gita as it is not really as it is. And they had many points. Then Srila Shivaram Maharaj wrote one book called Bhakti Vedanta Purports. And how many of you have darshan of the book at least? Let us see that. So that's the work of a disciple. One of the responsibilities of the disciple is this. Okay, you have a question?
I knew.
Okay, yoga. Very lucrative term, isn't it? In the West, Prabhupada, it's become very... You say yoga, people are interested. I want to do yoga, yoga. But they don't know what yoga is. These days, anything is selling on the name of yoga. Earlier, they had many names. Originally, it was Ashtanga Yoga. From there, Kriya Yoga came. And then Hatha Yoga came. And then Japa Yoga came. Ajapa Yoga came. And then so many yogas. Raja Yoga came, and Transcendental Meditation came, and what else? So many. Huh? Kripalus. Okay, some integral. Mahesh Yogi's Yoga came. Aurobindo's Transcendental Meditation, something came. Huh?
Vikram.
Vikram Yoga. Bikram Yoga came. So many. But they have to pay their, copyrights to Patanjali. They take something of Patanjali and put up their own and make some masala and give it to you. And these days the yogas which are coming are named after the person who is teaching. Some Siddharth's yoga. There's a big holding in Bombay. There's one person who will sit in with a suit and a boot and like this. And he looks very confident and says, you learn yoga from me and you will become like me or something like that. It has become like an advertisement for the hair oil or something like that. You use your this hair oil, then your hair will become like this. So in the same way, you do yoga and you will become like me. He's looking good, he's looking confident. And everybody thinks, maybe I should become like him if I do the yoga taught by him. And he's just making money out of it without paying royalty to Patanjali. So anyhow, let's come to yoga. The word yoga, we all know, Prabhupada talks about it. Yoga is yuj. The Sanskrit root word is yuj and it's unite. Now when we understand this word yoga, we say unite with Krishna. Union with Krishna. Union with Krishna means union with Krishna as a wife enters the family of Krishna, family of the husband. Not that unite in the sense you become a khichdi. Sabji unites with the rice in the khichdi. Dal unites with the rice in the khichdi. Not like that. But Prabhupada gives the example of husband and wife. They become one. When the scriptures say they become one, actually the Vaishnava understanding of this oneness is one family. The wife has become one with the husband doesn't mean they become some khichdi. Like in the south they worship Uma Maheshwara. Uma Maheshwara means half is Parvati, half is Lord Shiva. There are many deities like that. They are half Shiva and half Parvati. So this is just to show that how husband wife should live. But they construe this thing and so they mix, merge. There is no merging. So whenever the scriptures talk about oneness, many scriptures talk about ekatva, kaivalya. But this kaivalya is nothing but a wife entering into the family of the husband. Wife is there, husband is there, they are together. But they have become one family. Of course, we'll talk about it when we talk about Mayavad, merging and all. The green parrot entering the green tree, the rivers entering the ocean. These examples we'll talk tomorrow. But when I say yoga, union, it means unite with Krishna. But according to the yogis, especially Patanjali yogi, it is the union of the avayavas, your senses, with the mind. So he doesn't have any wrong understanding of for the word yoga. He is also talking about union, but he is generally talking about you make your mind and your senses in harmony. When you harmonize your mind with the senses, that's called yoga. In essence, it has got a very elaborate explanation. So much, the whole thing we're going to do in the morning session is that only. And this process is known as Chitta Vritti Nirodha. Yogaha Chitta Vritti Nirodha. This is what Patanjali says. Chitta Vritti. So this is the whole purpose. Then we'll go into details of what these Chitta Vrittis are, how, what are the favorable circumstances, what are the unfavorable circumstances, what is this Chitta, what is this mind. All these things we'll discuss. Chitta vritti means the agitations in the mind, which we'll talk about it. I'm just giving an example.
Who said this?
Patanjali. Yoga ha chitta vritti niroga. Yoga is meant for doing the chitta vritti, reducing the chitta vrittis. Okay. So this school of yoga, also known as Ashtanga Yoga, is closely allied to Sankhya philosophy. Closely light. Ashtanga Yoga is a practical application of Sankhya philosophy for the attainment of liberation. This closely light. Yesterday I made this point, like Nyaya Vaisheshikas, they are like friends. What Nyaya doesn't talk, Vaisheshika talks. The same way, what Sankhya did not talk, Yoga spoke. There's a big question. There are two questions, major problems in Sankhya are two. One is, what about God? Without God, how can you tell anything? How can you explain? Number two, what are the practices we should do? Just studying Sankhya, everything is okay? Just thinking, no, I am not this body, I am not this body. Just chanting, I am not this body, I am not this body. Do you think, I am not this world, I have got nothing to do with eyes, that I am not suffering. Do you think suffering will go away? These are two major questions posed. Then Patanjali answers these two questions. Okay, Sankhya is my friend. Whatever the limitations are there in them, I am going to solve the limitations. I accept what all Sankhya told. And his limitations, I will fulfill. By introducing God, I accept God. Ishvara. And he uses this word, Ishvara Pranidhana. It will come in later part. He says, Ishvara Pranidhana, surrender to God should be there. Without surrender to God, how can you do any? How can you attain liberation? So he accepts God. And number two, he says that Sankhets, they don't talk about what to do. Even Nyaya Vaisheshikas, they don't talk about what to do. You should give descriptions what to do. Ultimately, after hearing the entire philosophy, the question is, what should I do? Then I'll talk about what to do. Then he gives a very elaborate things, elaborately. The whole Patanjali Yoga Sutra is full of his elaborations. And later commentators, they have elaborated more on this. Patanjali gave only 4 asanas. And later on, it went to 72 asanas. From just see where from 4, where 72. And later on commentators, they expanded it. So, these are the two things which Sankhya was externally very much lacking. There are so many lackings in Sankhya that will not, that is not the subject matter of Patanjali. The two major lackings which the Sankhya had. One is about God, other is what to do, practicality. These two things Patanjali tried to cover up. But mostly almost the Sankhya philosophy, that is of Shakti Parinamvada, and the understandings of Sankhya about Purusha and Prakriti, what is Purusha, what is Prakriti, and the combination, all the things, the modes, everything he accepted Patanjali as it is. So he did not write much about these things. What is Purusha? What is Prakriti? They are not found in the Patanjali, because he just says, okay, as it is, as above, as Sankhya. Now, Ashtanga Yoga is a practical application of Sankhya philosophy for the 10th liberation. It is known, it is called as Patanjali Yoga because it was systemized by the sage Patanjali. Now, in the Patanjali Yoga Sutras, there are four chapters. First one is known as Samadhi Pada. The second one is known as Sadhana Pada. The third one is known as Vibhuti Pada. And the fourth one is known as Kaivalya Pada. Four chapters. Like in Sankhya also, we have four chapters. Vaisheshika had 10. In two parts, two parts. Small Vaisheshikas. Small chapters. But these are big chapters. Samadhi Pada, Sadhana Pada, Vibhuti Pada and Kaivalya Pada. In Samadhi Pada, you have nature of yoga system, Chitta Vritti and method of yoga. Methods of yoga. In the Sadhana Pada, we have Kriya Yoga, Kleshas, Phala and Causes Suffering. These things will come later. I'm just reading them because you will know each chapter has got these topics. Vibhuti Pada, very, very famous. That is Siddhis. Prapya Siddhi, Ayyam Siddhi, Lagama Siddhi, all these Siddhis he explains. Vibhuti Pada. Kaivalya Pada, liberation. What is liberation? All these things are discussed. Okay. The yogic view of mind. First you'll understand what he says. What is the meaning? What exactly he's talking about? As Sankhya mostly talks about cause and effect, yoga talks about mind. Everywhere this word mind comes. But the only problem, only thing is, instead of using the word mana, he used the word chitta. For manas, he used the word chitta. That's all. So the yogic process is primarily centered around the mind or chitta. In Sankhya, its whole description is just on cause and effect. It goes to so much deep discussion about the cause and effect. Cause and effect. Now, the yoga system is based on the same tenets of Sankhya philosophy, and it also incorporates some of the teachings of Vedanta. Some teachings of Vedanta, especially accepting God, always talking about God. Whenever you don't have any solution, put God there. And other one is practicality. In Sankhya system of philosophy, the mental body is defined in terms of three functions. That is mind, intelligence and false ego. Yesterday we did that. Now in the Vedanta philosophy, you have four. Mind, intelligence, false ego and chitta. Are the conditioned consciousness, the storehouse of memories. Now this is what we have to understand. When we read the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna talks about Sankhya, he gives the very preliminary understanding of Sankhya, saying that the subtle body is made up of mind, intelligence and false ego. But if you read Bhagavatam, Kapila clearly says the subtle body is made up of mind, intelligence, false ego and chitta. Okay? And now here, Patanjali, what he does, he uses these words chitta, but the chitta of Vedanta is different from chitta of Patanjali. This has to be noted. What chitta is spoken as, in chitta means the contaminated consciousness. Like Prabhupada talks about rainwater comes down and becomes in contact with mud, it becomes muddy water. That muddy water is chitta. Consciousness mixed with the three modes is chitta, the soul's consciousness. Now, see what Patanjali says. In yoga, the mental body is equated to mind, and the intelligence and false ego are considered to be aspects of that mind. Chitta denotes all functions and changing phenomena of the mind. Now, he says, intelligence and false ego, they are nothing but two aspects are the mental states. And the mind is called chitta. The mental body is equated to chitta. So in other words, even though he is using the word chitta, it is not referring to the contaminated consciousness, what we talk in the Vedanta or in the Bhagavata. It is just talking about mind only. And he puts these two, the false ego and intelligence, as the functions of the mind. There are two main sources of arising waves of thoughts, sense perception, memories. When the waves of the lake are still and the water is clear, one can look deep down and see the bottom of the lake. In a sense, he says the problem is with the agitations in the mind, agitations in the chitta. And he compares the entire subtle body as a lake. The mind as a lake. And there are so many waves in the lake. And because of that, you are not able to see the bottom floor. Identity is not seen. We give this example many times, but Swatanjali also gives this example, but his understanding is different. Now, the modifications of the mind are chitta vritti. In English, vritti is known as modifications or agitations. You can use this word agitation also.
Vritti.
Spelling is wrong. This I could not write diacritic, so just write. Below R there is a dot. Vritti. V-R-I-T-T-I. Vritti. Agitations. Or agitations are the functions, the modifications of the mind. Propensities. The mind's propensities. These are five kinds of propensities for the mind, he says. Let us see what they are. Now, what are these five vrittis? Let's see what these five vrittis are. Although emotions and mental behaviors falls into one of the... What are the five classes, five vrittis? Pramana, first one. The second one is... Pramana and actually ignorance. The opposite of pramana is it's a wrong spelling here. I'll tell the exact spelling later sometime. But okay, pramana and there is. Ignorance, the second one is avidya, or ignorance, you can just note it like that. Or invalid cognition or ignorance. Third one is vikalpa, fourth one is nidra, and fifth one is smriti or memory. Okay. Now, although emotions and mental behavior falls into these five categories, they are further divided into two major types. Those cause klishtas and those who don't cause klishtas. Fall cognition, verbal cognition, sleep always cause affliction. The first three are always disturbing. And the other three are not disturbing. They are okay. They are very good. So let us see what these five are. And see how Patanjali has talked about these chitta vrittis. And all the chitta vrittis he just made into five. And Vedantas. Or Vedas don't accept it. Vyasa in his commentary on Patanjali Vedas, Patanjali Sutras, he has rejected Patanjali as non-Vedic just because these five things are not spoken in the Vedas. But he has somehow come to this conclusion that those only five chitta vrittis. Pramana. Now he says that valid cognition. The source of valid cognitions are perceptions, inference and authoritative testimony, which have already been described in detail in the Sanghi chapter. So now here, that is the problem with Patanjali. He says, your chitta vritti means some agitations in the mind sometimes can give you correct knowledge. Vyasa goes to a long extent and proving that how Patanjali can say this, correct knowledge can be perceived by the chitta vritti. How can chitta vritti give you, or the activities of the mind can give you correct knowledge? Now he says sometimes it can give. Okay. Other times, it gives you false knowledge. That is known as false cognition. The first one is valid cognition, second is false cognition. Now, if sometimes somebody says right, sometimes somebody says wrong, can you accept that person as an authority? Somebody says, you ask somebody, do you tell the truth? Say, I tell the truth always, but sometimes not. You don't know when he's going to tell a lie. So, Vyasa says that by this, the whole Patanjali sutras are nothing but mano vritti. He says mano vritti. His whole bhashya, his whole sutras are mano vritti. Means he's coming from his Patanjali's mind and they are not Vedic. Something comes from your own mind is not Vedic. Mano vritti. Just because of this thing. And many other things Vyasa accepts when he talks about yoga and sadhana and all these things. But here he doesn't accept. Sometimes it gives you false knowledge. It is a modification of the mind that that is the mother of all the kleshas, afflictions. Ignorance has four offshoots. This we'll talk later. Modification when ignorance comes. And next one is vikalpa, the third. Vikalpa is verbal cognition. There are so many disturbances and all, so many things which may go on in the mind. But when you speak it out, that becomes verbal. So verbal cognition is an attempt to grasp something that actually does not exist, but its own projection. An example of such a projection is the fantasy of marrying some beautiful fairy and together flying through the empyrean to the most wonderful paradise. All such fantasies are mere verbal cognition that do not correspond to the fact and only cause the mind to fluctuate. So, verbal vikalpa means, so my desires are there and I speak out the desire, or I ponder over the desire. So that is another kind of vritti. Many of these, in one sense it is daydreaming. This is one of the vrittis. Daydreaming means, I open my eyes, and I'm looking at everything, and consciously, or I'm speaking about it, or I'm thinking about it. So this is called vikalpa. This is another vritti. This is another vritti. What is it? Nidra. Nidra is another vritti. Just see how this goes. Sleep is a modification of the mind in which one's relationship with the external world is cut off. One might ask, if the sleep is a modification of the mind, aren't dreaming and waking states also accepted modifications? The answer would be no. The dreaming state is occupied with verbal cognition and the waking state is occupied mainly with the valid cognition and invalid cognition. Now, in the Nidra is primarily during the time of this is also a kind of a dream. Like I sleep and I go on dreaming. That is another state of the mind. There cannot be any self-realization. Even you say some philosophy to him, that person cannot understand. And then smriti, memory, The fifth and the final mental modification is a recall of the impressions stored in the mind. These are the modifications of the mind. Okay. Now, these are the chitta vrittis. Now, if somebody doesn't do yoga, first Patanjali says, if somebody doesn't take up the practice of yoga, what happens is these five chitta vrittis, they increase. They go on increasing. You will become more and more mental speculator. You sleep more. You dream more. And your mind become more and more disturbed. And it leads to insanity. And more insanity. When this happens, when jitta vrittis are not controlled, it gives rise to these five kinds of problems. What are they? Kleshas. Problems. Avidya. Ignorance in mistaking non-eternal for eternal. The impure to be pure. Misery for happiness. And downsell to the self. From ignorance. So, these avidya comes. And from avidya, other four comes. So, actually in total four. So, Patanjali goes on to a very deep extent of explaining how every avidya leads to these four things. Ultimately, there are five things. One plus four. But the one avidya is the major source for everything. Avidya is ignorance. For him, ignorance means he is right in this aspect. Vyasa accepts him. Ignorance means to think something which is not there to be there to be not, to think which is there to be not there. That is called ignorance. In this way, he is right. And then, from ignorance comes asmita. Asmita means I. And then there is raga, attachment, mine. And something which has become mine has gone away from me. Or somebody who is mine doesn't give me happiness, then dvesha. And then the last one is abhinivesha. Abhinivesha means a desperate measure to accumulate things. I want it. A desperation. Example can be given at a monkey. A monkey is so engrossed in eating. Like there is a desperation. He is like this. So how does a monkey eat? If you give a plate of peanuts to a monkey, how does a monkey eat? He's eating. Isn't it? As if somebody is going to come and steal it. He is the only monkey, but still it does it. So, this is the most dangerous, this is actually badness. At the highest level of klesha is that the person thinks, I'm going to die. If I'm going to die, I have to have it. I want to enter. There's a politician in South India. This lady, she had 2,000 varieties of chappals in her house. And 10,000 varieties of saris in her house. That means, oh, if I die, how am I going to live without it? I should get it. I should keep it. So, fear of death, which is the urge of self-preservation. There's always fear of death. In this way, they go on accumulating. So, Patanjali, he talks about all these things to a length. Now, there are five stages. Yeah.
I think these five, they are also presented in Bhagavatam, or they are in the
Madhuri Kadam? Yeah, they are there. Aspita, Avidya, they are all used. Vyasa accepts this, no?
Yes, accept.
He accepts. This is accepting. But he doesn't accept that from chitta vritti sometimes knowledge can come up. That is not accepted. But the chitta vrittis are not taken care of properly, then from avidya, saspita, raga, desha, abhinivesha, they all come. Yes, never comes proper knowledge.
Till not come.
Till not. Has it ever come from chitta vritti? From your mind, you ever thought Krishna is God? Or you ever thought that I am not this body? No, never it happened.
Knowledge comes from
the higher source. Now you may say, no, Paramatma speaks. For that Paramatma, you should have made the Chittavruttis completely peaceful. That is why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Jitatmanaha Prashantasya Paramatma Samahitaha Sitoshna Sukadukkeshu Mana Apamanayo. Like in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about so much of yoga, but there, what Krishna says as yoga is not the Patanjali yoga. We have to be very careful about it. Krishna is not talking about Patanjali yoga. Neither in any scripture where yoga comes, in the Vedas and yoga comes, in the Bhagavad Gita word yoga comes, it is not referring to Patanjali yoga. I forgot to mention this point. As in yesterday we discussed, the 2nd chapter of Bhagavad Gita is Sankhya yoga. That has nothing to do with the Sankhya of Atheistic Kapila. In the same way, yoga of the Supreme Person, Karma Yoga or the Jnana Yoga mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam in the Vedas, it has got nothing to do with the Patanjali Yoga. Yesterday I gave the notes to you, in that I mentioned a verse, Sankhya Yoga Pratagbala. Sankhya Yoga Pratagbala Pravadantina Pandita. When Krishna says Sankhya and Yoga are same, when here it is told Sankhya and Yoga are also friends, there is a vast difference between that Sankhya and Yoga which Krishna has told and the Sankhya and Yoga of the 6 systems of philosophy. Sankhya Yoga Pratakvala, that Sankhya and Yoga doesn't refer to the 6 systems of philosophy Sankhya, neither to the Patanjali Yoga nor to the Kapilas. So there Krishna is talking about devotional Sankhya, devotional Yoga. Wherever Yoga comes in the Bhagavad Gita, that is what people mistake. They say Sankhya is there, explained by Kapila, Yoga is there in Patanjali. If somebody wants to understand Bhagavad Gita better, read Sankhya of Atheistic Kapila and Patanjali's yoga system. That's what people do. That is why the Bhagavad Gita is... Just because Patanjali wrote these yoga sutras. True.
But the source of it is somewhere in the Vedas
or not? No, Patanjali yoga sutras source, as I have told, they say our source is Upanishads. Because we should not forget this thing. The different sages, when they approached the Upanishads, they asked this question, what is the source? They got these sutras. So, Patanjali Yoga Sutras, his source, though he says it is the Upanishads, but his philosophy is not in confirmation of the Upanishads. That is what Vyasa, he proved. And Vyasa, he wrote commentary on the Patanjali Yoga Sutras. He did not write commentary on Nyaya, Vaisheshika, Sankhya, because anyhow, they don't accept God. But Vyasa wrote a commentary because Patanjali accepts God. And at the end, he proves that though he accepts God, he is an atheist. Why Vyasa touched Patanjali Sutras? Because, he accepts God? Okay, I'll give a commentary. Because anybody who accepts God, I should give a commentary. Vyasa should give a commentary. So he gave a commentary and then proved that he is an atheist. That we will see at the end when it comes to the concept of God.
Why Vyasa touched the Sankhya? Because they are not accepting God.
Ishvarena Siddhe.
Nevertheless, he touched Sankhya in
Sankhya. Yeah. Sankhya, he never accepted God. In Sankhya,
Vyasa gave some.
In the Vedanta Sutra, he refuted. But he did not give a commentary on the Sankhya Sutras.
He didn't give commentary.
Commentary.
He gave
Yes. He has given a commentary on the yoga of Patanjali. While giving commentary of yoga, Patanjali Yoga Sutras, Vyasa, wherever Patanjali spoke something in concurrence with the Veda, he accepted. Wherever he did not speak, he rejected. Like that. Like these 5 things, avidya, aspita, raga, desha, abhinivesha, Vyasa accepts, it's true. This is what happens when we don't try to control the mind. More ignorance, and that ignorance leads to other 4. Another ignorance, this leads to other 4. In this way, there is a huge network, Sharira Abhidya Jal, that We spread this network.
Just like Patanjali accepted God, but he is still at this state. Can it happen that we are accepting Krishna as Supreme Lord, but in subtly we can be also at this state?
Definitely. See, theism, according to Vyasa, what is the meaning of theism? Accepting God means knowing sambandha, abhidheya and prayojana. I say, oh, God is there. But if there is no proper sambandha, understanding of proper sambandha, understanding of proper abhidheya, and understanding of proper prayojana, your acceptance of God is as good as atheism. In this way, he refutes the so-called theistic people who use God, like Prabhupada says, God to be an order supplier God. Though you accept, say, oh God, give my daily bread. Okay, well and good. But if God doesn't give, then you try to find some other God who gives daily bread. So actually you are not a theist. You are actually a theist. But you have a desperation to get something. So anybody who gives bread is a God for you, isn't it? So in the Vedantas this discussion comes. That how? If there is no perfect sambandha, perfect abhideya and perfect prayojana. If this understanding is not there. Even though just say God, God, God. What is the use? If you go to India. In India this is very common. So many people go to Ganesh temple. You stand there. And they say Ganesh is God. I Bhagwan ko darshan karke aata hun. You go to Durga temple. They say, they don't even understanding of what Durga is. They just say Bhagwan, Bhagwan hai bhai, Bhagwan. But what is use? Do you think they are theistic people? No, they are atheistic. They are theistic. Even Mayavadis, they worship God. Do you think they are theistic? So, this point we'll discuss in Vedanta, when it comes to Vedanta. So there Vyasa, Srila Baladeva Devadasan Prabhu explains that sambandha, abhidheya and prayojana should be perfect. Just saying God exists is not enough to be called as a theistic person. Like Prabhupada said, it is not enough to say God is great. He simplified everything. Simplified Vedanta. Isn't it? If you tell somebody, it's not enough to just say God is there. You should know sambandha abhidheya prayojana. I say, what are you speaking? In Prabhupada, somebody told God is great. How great? Just one line. That's enough. He told the same thing. So without knowing how great, okay, if he is great, what I got to do with him? Or if he is great, what I should do to him? By doing so, what I am going to attain? Three things. Sambandha, abhidheya, prayojana. Oh, God is great, let him be great. What is the problem? Oh, God is there, let him be there. I will do my work. So, this theism, he has got a very deep roots in the sambandha, abhidheya, prayojana. Proper sambandha, proper abhidheya, prayojana. Okay. So, we are now here. Chitta vruttis are five. If we don't take care of the chitta vruttis properly by practicing yoga, what is going to happen? These chitta vruttis are going to create first ignorance, after that the other four kinds of kleshas. Ultimately, ignorance is also klesha. Now, how do we get out of these chitta vruttis? Vyasa says, yogaha chitta vrutti nirodaha. To get out of the chitta vruttis, you have to practice yoga. Sorry, Patanjali. Patanjali says, by practice of yoga, you can get rid of the chitta vruttis, and when the chitta vruttis are gone, the kleshas are also gone. Now, to practice yoga, you have to make your mind favorable. For that, Vyasa or Patanjali, he goes to a very elaborate explanation of 5 different stages of mind, which Vyasa doesn't accept in his commentary as Vedantic. These 5 which is mentioned here, not Vedantic. What are they? Kshipta, Muda, Vikshipta, Ekagra, Niruddha. 5 different stages of mind, or states of mind, or stages of mind, whatever it is. First one is Kshipta. Now here comes, he uses this Sattva Rajas Tama. Kshipta means Rajas and Tamas cause the mind to be disturbed. Because of the predominance of Rajas, the mind becomes hyperactive. Because predominance of Tamas, it loses the quality of discrimination. Thus, it fills from one object to other without resting on any. It is constantly disturbed by external stimuli, but it does not know how to discriminate what is beneficial from what is useless. This is known as Kshipta. So now, the Sankhya comes again. That is Sattva Rajas Tama. In this mode of passion and ignorance, because of the mode of passion and ignorance, alternatively acting, passion comes, I want to do this. Ignorance comes, say, take another one. This is not a Kshipta. So the mind doesn't concentrate or rest on one thing. It doesn't make you do one thing for a long time. So it happens with us also. We take up something, do for some time, give it up and do something. So Rajas made you to take up something. Tamas made you to give up something. In this way, Rajas and Tamas alternatively function to make the mind Kshipta. Next, Mudha. When somebody gets completely frustrated with this, doing something, and he says, oh, I tried out so many things, Prabhu, I am completely frustrated now. Let me just take rest, let me sleep. That is called Mudha. So in the second stage of the mind, the tamas increases to such an extent, he becomes frustrated, and he just wants to sleep, and he becomes very lazy. So he was very hyperactive. And after hyperactive situation for a long periods of time, he gets frustrated and he just sleeps. Mudha. Vikshipta. In the rest of the state, there is predominance of Rajas. Then what happens is, after Mudha, then the energy is there still. The passion makes you again hyperactive. In this stage, the mind runs from one object to another but never stays anywhere consistently. This is the advanced stage of disturbed mind. In this way, there are 3 stages of disturbed mind. One is Kshipta, where passion, there is a lot of energy, you try to do something, after some time give it up, again try to do something, so many things, and then get frustrated. Ultimately, this thing happens, that Vikshipta, totally restless, that means madness, mad. To have a broad idea, he would like to say that Kshipta is materialistic people, Mudas are frustrated drug addicts, and Vikshiptas are those who are in the Pagalkana. Or those who are in the, what do you call it, Pagalkana? Mental. Mental asylum.
What is the first one?
Materialistic people. All materialistic people, Vikshipta. Passion ignorance goes on alternatively. And then, after everything fails, take drugs and sleep, just alcohol, drink alcohol. And ultimately, go to mental asylum.
And the third one is mental
asylum.
Mental?
mental asylum means Pagalkhana, mental hospital. So just give you a broad idea. These first 3 stages of mind are negative and act as impediment in the path of growth and exploration, but the next two stages are more calm and peaceful. All the modifications are found in their 3 stages. So now, according to Vyasa, according to Patanjali, the 5 modifications are 5 chitta vrittis. They are present in these 3 kinds of mind, these 3 stages of mind. Now, the other two stages of mind, they are actually the goals of, to attain that stage, these two stages, that is the goal of Vyasa, goal of Patanjali Yoga. Ekagra, Niruddha. Ekagra and Niruddha. In the one-pointed and well-controlled state, there is no modifications at all. There is no chitta vritti. That means you have attained perfection. In the one-pointed state of mind, there is predominance of sattva, the light aspect of prakriti. It is tranquil state near to the complete stillness in which the real nature of things are revealed. This fourth state is conducive to concentration. And the aim of yoga system is to develop to maintain this state for as long as possible, consistently as possible. There is the ekagra. And then, niruddha. It is well-controlled state of mind. There is no disturbance at all, but a pure manifestation of sattvic energy. In that state, consciousness reflects its purity and eternity in the mirror of mind, and one becomes capable of exploring one's true nature. Only the last tools of mind are positive and helpful for meditation, and many yogic practices are designed to develop one attain this status. When all the modifications cease and the state of stillness is required, then Purusha sees its real nature reflecting from the screen of the mind, that is Satrika Sa Vichara. Sa Vitraka and Sa Vichara, Sananda and Sa Smita. Now, these two states can be compared like this. We are going to come to that explanation later when we talk about Ashtanga. In Ashtanga Yoga, there are eight steps which we are going to discuss later. There is something called Dharana, Dhyana and Samadhi. In Samadhi, there are two kinds of Samadhi, which we are going to talk later also, but it comes here only, here also. They are known as Sampragnyatmika Samadhi and Asampragnyatmika Samadhi. So, this Sampragnyatmika Samadhi, in that Samadhi, the mind is ekagra. You are completely concentrating on one particular object or anything, but there is your sampragna, you are very much conscious what's happening, who is coming, who is going. So though the concentration is there, but still the knowledge of external world is there. But at the state of niruddha, there is no knowledge of what's happening in this world, you are completely engrossed in meditation. That is known as karma. So, in the preliminary stages of meditation, it is only sa vitrika. Means, you just know the person. You don't have any knowledge. Meditation is not in the qualities, etc., etc. Like we have, first, the name, the form, the qualities, and then nama, rupa, guna, lila and activities, and then the parikaras. A similar thing for him. When you are meditating on the object, when you reach a particular stage called sampragnyatmika, asampragnyatmika samadhi, at that time, within that asampragnyatmika samadhi, first stage you just see existence of a particular object or the object of meditation itself. And then the next stage is, you can see the form or the other form of the object. What is it? Sa vichara. And then you can see it has got a form, it looks like this. And then you relish the ananda by thinking about the qualities of the object of your meditation. And ultimately, he is saspita, that you become one with the object of your meditation and you don't know. Where you are, the object itself is the entire world, everything is just this object, nothing else. So there are some technical details of these things. We will not go deeper into this thing. I just mentioned these terms so that you understand that within that samprajñātmika samādhi also there are four stages. Something like similar to what we say, nāma, rūpa, guna, līla.
Is it asamprajñātmika?
Asamprajñātmika. Asamprajñātmika. Within that stage, these are the four.
Asamprajñātmika is the first.
Second one. Some first one is samprajñātmika.
Yeah.
Asamprajñātmika. Acha. Okay. Yeah, you see, when you do the devotional yoga with an aspect of devotion, keeping, like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Omitki Aksharam Brahma Vyavaram Mavanasparan, he says, Yogi, what you should do? Suchodeshe Paristhaya, go to a clean place, say it. So there, Krishna is talking about yoga, Vishra Bhakti, where he talks about. One should chant Om. Om ityekaksharam brahma. By chanting Om, what you should do? Mamanusparan. You should think of me as a personal form that you, I'm sitting in his heart. So that has got nothing to do with this thing. Because here, there is no concept of personal form of Krishna when it comes to Patanjali. Patanjali has no understanding of personal form of Krishna. And by practicing Patanjali Yoga system, nobody is going to attain the real Paramatma in the heart. By practicing devotional yoga, devotional Ashtanga Yoga, one can realize Paramatma in the heart. Now, Paramatma in the heart is not an ordinary thing. Like there is a clear-cut Siddhanta in the Bhakti Sandarbha. Without Bhakti, Jnana, Karma and Yoga will not give their result. Now here, there is no Bhakti. There is no Bhakti. Bhakti means you should know devotion to whom? There is no... Do you think Patanjali is talking about the real Paramatma? It is a big fallacy. Patanjali is not talking about the real Paramatma who is sitting in. Real Paramatma is too high for Patanjali to understand. Vyasa told him, atheist. How can atheist understand, have an understanding of Paramatma? No way. So that is why the yoga which is described in the Vedic literatures is not the yoga which Patanjali is talking about. Patanjali is talking about totally an atheistic yoga. So many devotees have this conclusion. Oh, they are yogis. They only realize Paramatma. It is a big certificate for them. It is not so. Yogi is realizing Paramatma is not an ordinary thing. What Sukadeva Goswami realized Brahman. Do you think Sukadeva Goswami is an ordinary person? Okay, coming right to the point. By practicing Mayavad by Shankaracharya, anybody realized Brahman? No. Mayavad is atheist. Atheistic people, how can they realize Brahman? They cannot realize Brahman. And Patanjali is atheist. How can he realize Paramatma? Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita it is mentioned that vadanti tattva idha tattvam yajnana madhyam brahmedi paramatmedi bhagavan shuddhate. Those who know Brahman Paramatma Bhagavan, they are known as tattvavidas tattvam. They are tattvavidaha. But Vyasa clearly told Patanjali is atheist. He is not tattvavid. Tattvavit Mahabahu Gunakarum Bhagavad. Oh, Gunamunesh Vartanti Timatvana Sajjate. Do you think Kapila is Tattvavit? Or Kapila Sankhya is Tattvavit? No. So we should be very careful. As much as the Sankhya in the Veda has got nothing to do with the Sankhya of Kapila, atheistic Kapila, the Yoga in the Vedas has got nothing to do with the Patanjali Yoga. Because we'll understand then, Patanjali doesn't accept God, though he says God. His conception of God is
different.
Not any different, it's bogus. It's bogus. Different means, okay, we accept God as 200 form, somebody accepts 400 form in Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, you may say different. But according to Patanjali, God is like a puppet in the hand of Purusha. Why? Because he says God is there. Openly says. But Sankhya, Nyaya Vaisheshika Sankhya, they don't say God is there openly.
Differently saying no God.
No God.
But said yes.
God is there. He says God is there. That is why he says you should surrender to God. But that God is neither Brahman nor Paramatma nor Bhagavan. That will come to know at the end. Yeah.
Includes these four stages: Svitarka, Savichara, Sananda, and Sasmita. All of them in Sampragmyatmika.
You see, according to Patanjali Yoga system.
According to Patanjali Yoga system,
meditation means you can select any object and meditate. Like some people say, probably I'm doing meditation. The problem is not meditation. On whom are you meditating on? You can meditate on this. Say, meditate, that's all. Go on meditating on this. Patanjali, there's no problem with Patanjali Yoga Sutras if you meditate on this. No problem. You select any object at the level of dharana. He says you select any object. It can be your wristwatch. It can be your point. That is why many people, they just draw some circles and they make a point. Just meditate on that point. Second, Patanjali, your mind... Whole purpose, your mind should not waver. It should be fixed on anything.
This is used by Maharishi Mahesh so much in transcendental meditation. I was 3 years listening.
Oh, you are already self-realized in yoga. So he has taken the same thing of Patanjali and added something of his and teaching something.
flying city.
We have big yogis in our class, I suppose. That is why I was just thinking, why everybody is so conscious and so eager to hear this class. Yesterday it was not so much. Today everybody is just... had some kind of attachment to Patanjali. I was not knowing. I'm just blasting Patanjali. Everybody saying, hey, why are you blasting? You know, I have some appreciation for him.
No, actually, Patanjali is so popular, becoming very popular in the West.
Oh.
Especially now, in very recent years. It's very big. It's becoming very big. I don't think anyone really understands, but it's just really popular. This is very true. Just yesterday, I told one lady, she's Brahmina, she was in our Bhaktivedanta class. Very advanced, nice girl, woman, for a long time she's devoted. I told her, why are you not coming for these classes? It's so interesting, just come. Then, what, maybe tomorrow? I said, yoga. We will discuss about yoga. Patanjali said, oh, Patanjali is yoga. Folks, he said, we'll come.
Good, she did not come. If she had come, I'll offer my Patanjali is gone.
She said, oh, Patanjali's yoga is
worse.
To come and listen, it's
like
going to an ashram. I was surprised. She was in our Bhakti Mandir.
Yes, Father.
But in Patanjali Yoga, aren't there also descriptions of the Paramatma for meditation?
Yes. He says, Paramatma is your friend. Paramatma, you open the last page. Okay, since so much about God is there, first I'll talk about God, then go to the last page. Okay. Concept of God. Last but one page. Then you'll go to the last page. Last page also. Concept of God. So then whatever I'm speaking, it makes some sense to you, because when I'm talking so bad about Patanjali, I felt you're all just thinking, why is he talking so bad about him? He's a good boy. I'm getting that feeling. Okay, Sankhya, you told Kapila Sankhya, atheistic, Prabhupada also told. But you know, yeah, Prabhupada is not even told, I never read that thing. But he has told, I'll tell you where it is. Okay, next. Yeah. Concept of he cannot be understood by Veda. That is the first point of Patanjali. Okay? Because for him, meditation is more important than Veda. And that is where these Karma Mimamsis, tomorrow, we're going to discuss today or evening or tomorrow, they become very heavy. How dare this Patanjali says God cannot be understood through Veda? They become very furious. And they, you know, Vyasa just mildly told Patanjali is atheist. Means mildly gave a commentary and he said he's atheist. But these people, Karma Mimamsis, they are, because they're so attached to Veda. Veda means life and soul for them. For the Karma Mimamsis or the Purva Mimamsis, they take the Patanjali Yoga Sutras and tear it into pieces and throw it out just because of this. Because they say, Patanjali says, God is something even Veda cannot understand. You cannot understand. He is a guide for the Prakriti and Purusha to come close together. Because he has to patch up Sankhya, he is the guide for Prakriti and Purusha to come close together. And now he is the witness and is a friend of all the sadhakas. The moment you take up your yoga practice, God will help you at every step. And he is not the source of the world. What is the source of this world? Universal consciousness, which is not God, according to Patanjali. It is just consciousness. If you accept universal consciousness as God, even the Purushas also have universal consciousness, according to Patanjali. So he becomes a Mayavadi. So there is a lot of connection between Mayavada and yoga. So if you accept God as separate from the universal consciousness, then you don't become a Mayavada, you can become a Patanjali. So what people do, they say that universal consciousness itself is God and Jiva is also a universal consciousness, so Patanjali is talking about Mayavada. That is how Mayavada, this, they take yoga practices and they do it. Next, he is not the controller, only the controller for those who are Ishvara Pranidhana. Controller means advisor, that's all. Patanjali accepts the existence of God, but this kind of God. Pranidhana means those who surrender to Ishvara. Okay, now let's read what Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about it, Patanjali. This whole thing is from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Tattva Viveka. The Yoga Shastras is also called Patanjali Shastras. It is written by Patanjali in the Sadhana Kanda section of this book. Book is the following sutra. God is a certain person who is untouched by suffering, karma, destiny, calamity. He knows everything because he is untouched by time. He is master of all. Seeing this description of God, many may think Patanjali is a true devotee of God, like we all now sitting here. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says clearly. However, at the end of the Patanjali's book, the mistaken impression is dispelled. In the Kaivalya Pada, last section of that book, Patanjali writes, Purushartha Shunyam, Shunyanam, when the goals of life are no more, then liberation, which establishes soul's original nature or the soul's spiritual potency, is manifest. In the Bhoja Vritti, this sutra is explained in these words. Chitchaktir vritti swarupa nivritti swarupa matra. When the soul no longer has form, when it is situated in the spiritual essence, that is called Kaivalya. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains this. This means, when the spiritual potency is situated in its own nature, that is called Kaivalya, liberation. In this passage, what is the meaning of the phrase liberation of spiritual potency? Does it mean here that when they attain liberation, the individual soul no longer performs any action? Does it mean that after he attains liberation, the individual soul continues to have relationship with God? Unfortunately, this Yoga Shastra book does not answer these questions. After again and again reading this book, one will become convinced that God described in the Sadhanakanda section is considered only as imaginary being created to help attain spiritual perfection. And after the soul attains perfection, the idea of God is no longer taken seriously. Is this book theistic or atheistic? You give your answer. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's own words. You give your answer. After reading this book, is this book theistic or atheistic? You give your answer. So, Patanjali accepted an imaginary God in the Sadhana Kanda. And at the end, when the Kaivalya Kanda came, throw God. Exactly like the Mayavadis. When we say Mayavadis are atheistic people, they accept, like Shripa Shankaracharya, he said, Panchopasana. You select anyone. You can select Ganesha, select Durga, Shiva, Vishnu and Surya. Select anyone and worship. After you worship, once you reached knowledge, you should stop worshipping. There is no God. He is an imaginary person accepted only for some time so that you can reject him at the end. I gave the example of the X factor. Let X equal to this. Imagine. Imagine X equal to this. In the whole equation there is God, God, God. And at the end, no X. So, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's own words. Only an imaginary being created to help attain spiritual realization. So, that is why... Good, I spoke about it. Otherwise, I think many of us had this, you know, Patanjali is atheistic. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has clarified this point. No. That is why the yoga mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, like in the Prabhupada purport, Sampragnyatmika, Sampragnyatmika, though the terms may be same, but it is not the same.
No, it doesn't mean the same.
It's not the same. Because, do you think Patanjali has ever told in his sutras, Om ityai kaksharam brahma vyavaram mamanusparan? Krishna told this. While chanting Om, think of my form. He's telling, mam anusparan, continuously think of me while chanting Om. Because chanting Om, thinking it is Krishna Sarupa, is also done in the Vaishnava Sampradaya. If you go to Madhvas, they only chant Om. Do you think they are impersonalist? Prabhupada told, Om is impersonal sound representation of Krishna. They are chanting Om. They are impersonalist. One devotee told me this point. I was shocked. Hey, Madhva was the person who defeated impersonalism. And you say they are impersonalist? They are an impersonalist. Just because somebody chants Om, that doesn't mean they are impersonalist. Once Srila Jayapataka Maharaj said, he, in some temple, there was one local Brahmin. He used to come in front of the Lord and chant, Om, Om, like that. And hours together he used to chant. And Vibhama went and told Prabhupada, this is a Mayavadi. You know, he's coming and disturbing us, chanting Om, what should we do with him? Then Prabhupada asked him to open the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, Om ityai kaksharam brahma vyavaram anusparan, and not that verse, where Krishna says, I am the Om. Pranamaha sarvedeshu. He says, Krishna is Om. So, devotional yoga, while performing devotion, we use certain yogic principles which are mentioned in the Vedic literatures. That is not a problem. But only that will make you a yoga mishra bhakta, not a pure devotee. But bhakti is the only thing which can give results to karma, jnana and yoga. But Patanjali Yoga Sutras, for heaven's sake, don't mistake with the yoga of Krishna. Or yoga mentioned in the Bhagavatam. In the Bhagavatam also yoga is mentioned. And that has got nothing to do with Patanjali, please. Prabhupada sometimes quote some things from Patanjali in those purports, that doesn't mean both are same. It is not the same, please. Do you think Bhagavatam would ever care to mention Patanjali? Would not even care to what Patanjali spoke. Would not do that. They only would refute. Vyasa gave a commentary, that is said. So, he is an atheist. Please don't... When we say Paramatma, when Krishna says Bharta Bhokta Maheshwara Paramatma Vichapyukto Deheshpin Purushuparha, that Paramatma is the real Paramatma. When Yoga Sutra say Paramatma, they are talking about imaginary Paramatma.
What brings quotes from Patanjali in his commentary?
He says even Patanjali accepted God, just to say. It's like Prabhupada says, even the modern science accepts there is change of body at every few years, isn't it? That doesn't mean they become the authority. Whether you accept modern science or the Krishna's version, you find that the body is temporary. Prabhupada writes in second chapter. So you are quoting from somebody just to say, even he also says it. Even those who are atheistic also, they say. That's what is this. Yeah, just to support the idea, that's all. So he quotes from scientists also. He quotes from Mahatma Gandhi also. So that doesn't make them the acharyas. Just to make that point more clear. That's all. Sixth chapter.
So, it's not the same meaning.
Yeah, it's not the same meaning. Please don't. Yeah. Like when Prabhupada says Maya, and many places says Maya, and when Shankaracharya says Maya, are they the same? When Shankara says Maya, he is referring to this world being unreal. When Prabhupada says Maya, it means our perception of the world as the cause of my sense gratification, that is Maya. So, again, see, Nyaya Vaisheshikas, though they're nonsense, philosophy is nonsense, one thing they did good. Padartha, to know the meaning of the word as it is, that's important. Even within the Vaishnava commentator itself, when Ramanuja says something, and Madhvacharya says something, you should understand they are using the word in a different context. The thing is to study this thing by then only. How to know means then you study.
Life is so limited, I cannot study all acharyas. I have no time.
That is the mood of our Gaudiya Vaishnava acharyas. Rupa Raghunatha Pade Kobe Hobi Akuti. And you see, Prabhupada, I just cannot speak without quoting him. The sentence means, when will I develop attraction to Rupa Raghunath's lotus feet?
Yes.
But Prabhupada says, to their words. Pada means feet also. Pada means?
Word.
Words also. Yeah. And Prabhupada doesn't translate as feet. He translates as?
Words.
The words. Isn't it? So this is a very good mood. When will I read it? When will I read it? When I am going to do that? Kada tava namagrahane bhavishyati. This is the Gaudiya Vaishnava mood. We go in a different way. Chalo. Again, coming back to Patanjali.
Opponent.
Now you become opponent? Very good. Yes. Everything you want to do, just one instance, it comes later. Otherwise, I have to go back again. Because there's a confusion about God. People had think Patanjali is a theistic person, you know, he's good. To remove that concept, I went back. And then I'm coming forward. Okay. Overcoming the modifications, Achutta Vritti. There is one paragraph, I just read that paragraph, that's all. The modifications of the mind are caused by nine conditions of impediments, namely sickness, incompetency, doubt, delusion, sloth, non-abstination and confusion, non-attainment of desired state. Instability is an attained state. So they give some list of how these agitations become more and more. These impediments disturb the mind and produce sorrow, dejection, restlessness and unrhythmic breathing patterns. Yoga provides a method for overcoming these problems and controlling these modifications of mind. Patanjali states the mind and its modifications can be controlled through practice and detachment. Now Krishna also says, Abhyasena tu Kaunteya Vairagyena cha. The mind is said to be the river that flows between two banks. One bank is positive, is the basis of liberation. Another bank is negative and is the basis of indiscrimination, infestation, the sense objects. See, according to the Patanjali Yogas, it is the mind. Mind is everything. So Upanishads also talk about it in one sense. There is one verse which Prabhupada quotes in the 6th chapter about mind is the cause of liberation, bondage. Manayeva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshayoho. Bandhayan vishyan sange mokshayan nirvishyan manaha. There's a verse in the Amrita Bodhini Upanishad. Prabhupada quotes in the Bhagavad Gita purports. There's one Bhagavad Gita, can you see that? Where it is, then people have an idea. You can go to the index and then see. Index of the quoted verses. You can also see, no problem. Index of the quoted. It says, Manayeva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshayo. Mind is the cause of both bondage and liberation. And when does the bondage happen? Bandhayan vishyan sango. When the mind is attached to vishayas, to sense objects, then bondage is there. When the liberation is there, mokshayan nirvishyan manaha. It is true. But the Upanishads, when they say it is only one of the stages. It doesn't mean that there is nothing beyond mind. But Patanjali, he just takes that thing. And then says, everything is this only. By mind you are bound, by mind you will be liberated. So Krishna is not the cause of your bondage. Krishna is not the cause of your liberation. Krishna only helps you in between. God, if at all. His God, not Krishna. We say, take God, and he helps only in between the bondage and liberation. Before bondage and after liberation, no requirement of any God because you are liberated. Okay, you are not able to find it? You can note it. Where. Go to the last page. We should know how to use the Bhagavad Gita. In the Bhagavad Gita, there are two kinds of index. There are three kinds of index. One is the index of the words. One is the index of the verses in the Bhagavad Gita. That is the index of the verses quoted in the Bhagavad Gita. So, you open the index of the verses quoted. And then see the words, manayeva. In the Bhakti Shastri class, the first thing which I tell the students is this. How to use the Bhagavad Gita. Got it? What is the verse number? What is the verse number? 6-5. Oh, that verse talks about yato yato is chalit. That verse 6-5, what does it talk about? Atma nama sadayet. Atmevi atmano bandur. Atmevi puratmanaha. Read the verse. Uddhare tatmaratmanam, natmanam, vasadhet, atmevi atmanubandhur, atmevi ripratma. Mind is a friend, mind is enemy, in that verse, in that purport. In the purport, Prabhupada, what is he quote? That verse. Which Upanishad is it from? Amrita Bindu Upanishad 2. Okay, so going further. Patanjali states that the mind and its modification can be controlled through practice, abhyasa and detachment, vairagya. Mind is said to be like a river which flows between two banks. One bank is positive and the other basis of liberation. While the other bank is negative and the basis of indiscrimination and infatuation for its sense objects. When the current of the river is controlled by practice and detachment, it tends to flow towards the side of liberation. Abhyasa, practice means particular type of effort or technique through which the mind maintains stillness. Practice does not mean engaging in mental gymnastics. It is rather a sincere effort for maintaining steadiness of mind. Perfection in practice is attained through sincerity and persistence. Methods of practice will be discussed in conjunction with the discussion of the eight limbs of yoga. Vairagya, detachment or dispassion, doesn't mean to renounce the world or withdraw oneself from the environment. Rather, it means to have no expectation from an external object. Detachment means to eliminate identification with the evil roots of nature and to understand oneself as pure self, as illuminating conscious being. Patanjali also describes another method called Kriya Yoga to help student attain a higher state of consciousness while dealing with restless mind. Kriya Yoga, which means the yoga of purification, is a threefold discipline composed of practice of austerity, study of scriptures and surrender to God. By practice of path of Kriya Yoga, students learn to perform their duties skillfully and selflessly while dedicating the fruits of their actions to the Supreme God. Okay, now he elaborately describes about the eight paths, Ashtanga Yoga. For what is the purpose of it? Chitta Vritti. Let our chittas with this, then all go away. Eightfold path, we all know the names. Yamani, Yamasana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. These are the eight names. First one is Yama. Yama means, in simple words, it is those things which we are not supposed to do. We have, in English, do's and don'ts. Yama means don'ts. Those things which you are not supposed to do. Regulations. We have rules and regulations. Rules means those things which you are supposed to do. Regulations means those things which we are not supposed to do. So according to Patanjali, he has got five yamas, five restraints. Like we have four regulative principles, Patanjali has got five. Let us see what are these five. Says Ahimsa. Sthaya means not to lie. Third one is Asthaya, not stealing. Sensory control, Brahmacharya. Aparigraha, non-possessiveness. So he goes at length in describing what these things are. You cannot be a human, according to Patanjali, if you don't practice Yama and Niyama. Without practicing Yama and Niyama, it is a sin, according to the commentators of Patanjali Yoga Sutras, to teach asanas and pranayama pratyahara. It is a sin. Now these days, they teach asanas so that they can break these Yama Niyama. So there are five other things known as Niyama. Purity, contentment, austerity, study, surrender. Now here, three things. Austerity, study and surrender, they are known as Kriya Yoga. And these days they say Kriya Yoga means just do go to your office and then do your work, that is Kriya Yoga. Even Patanjali could not imagine that people can use my philosophy, my words to such a thing. For him, Kriya means the activity of purity, contentment and austerity or surrender. These are known as Kriya Yoga. Austerity, study and surrender. This is Kriya Yoga. Going to an office and doing and taking care of your family is not at all Kriya Yoga. It is Kriya Bhoga, not Yoga. I do the Kriyas for my Bhoga. But Patanjali, if Patanjali would have cried if he had come now and seen the situation of that how people are taking misadvantage, would have cried, you know, why did I write? Already I did nonsense. And I could not, even Patanjali cannot imagine that. The kind of nonsense they're preaching on the name of yoga.
But he was sincere when he wrote his sutras.
Okay, let me talk something about Patanjali. How many of you have been to the Samadhi of Patanjali? How many have been to Rameshwaram? You been to Rameshwaram? Then you should have told, I've been there. In Rameshwaram, you find Patanjali of Samadhi. Samadhi of Patanjali. And there, actually, he's a Sabhapati of Rameshwaram temple. The Sabhapati means the kind of a president. So, in one sense, he's the president of Rameshwaram temple, Patanjali. And his teacher, his spiritual master, was known as Vyagrapadar. Vyagrapada in Sanskrit, Padar in Tamil language. So, in this way, they used to do meditation together. And so they had to get some flowers from top of a hill to offer to Ramalingam, that Rameshwaram Shiva. So his guru, he took the form of a tiger's leg, that is why it's known as Vyagrapada. And then he ran and then brought flowers immediately. Now Patanjali, he took the form of a snake. So all these pastors, guru and disciple did there. So, there are so many things spoken about Patanjali here and there, but ultimately he took Samadhi there. His Samadhi is not like his body and Samadhi, he's only a lamp, that's all. He's only a lamp. One thing you should understand, Gautama, Kanada, Kapila, Patanjali and Jamini, they were all great sages. When we say Patanjali is atheist, means he has written the atheistic philosophy called Yoga Sutras. But we don't really ascribe it to him, like Shankara. Shripa Shankaracharya wrote a philosophy which is atheistic, which is Mayavad. But himself is a great devotee of Krishna. So don't try to develop enviousness towards these people. It is Krishna's arrangement that he wanted these people to write these sutras so that the confusions which would arise in future can be destroyed. As we are discussing the Siddhanta and refutation so much, these refutations, what we are doing is not to go to their place and destroy them, not for that. These confusions may arise in my mind at any time during my sadhana. So when these confusions come, where is the answer? In our books. So these confusions which these sages are writing, it is only for Vyasa to come and give a commentary so that if these confusions are coming in the mind of the devotees, they will get an answer. If the confusions would have not been raised, then Vyasa would have not given the commentary. And later on, if these confusions come in the mind of a devotee, where will they find the answer from? Like, if Parikshit Maharaj, if Arjuna was not confused, do you think Krishna would have spoken Bhagavad Gita? No. It is Krishna's arrangement that his Parshad was put into a state of confusion. Parshadas can never go into confusion at any time. Arjuna was not confused. It is a divine arrangement of Krishna that he was put into confusion. Parikshit Maharaj would never put a snake in the and garland the Rishi. But it is, and he understands, it's a divine arrangement of the Lord so that Bhagavatam would come. The same way when these Rishis, they, of course, we cannot accept all the Rishis to be pure devotees or acharyas, but they were great sages within their own fields. And Krishna gave them the potency to write these sutras and bring out these confusions. And later on, Vyasa and other acharyas would come and then destroy these confusions so that if these confusions come in our mind, then there is an answer. So this has to be discussed among the devotees. It is not that we go to Patanjali school and then say you are having imaginary God and all. No, it can come any time. Even after 20 years of sadhana, this thought can come, God whom we are worshipping is imaginary. It can come. Then we have the commentary with the acharyas, we have the sadhus. When we sit in the Bhagavatam class, hear a discussion, raise our objection, raise our doubt, then we hear, get satisfied, confusion is gone. Confusion is gone. So we have to understand this particular aspect. Yeah.
They were great sages in what sense? What was their practice?
See, they're great sages means they are pure, and they read the scriptures. They were very powerful people, and they did not accept these philosophies for their own life. One thing for sure. Patanjali, though he has written, he never considered that there is imaginary God. That we have to study the entire life of Patanjali and other aspects of Patanjali, like Gautama.
Because they were like
Shripa Shankaracharya. He wrote Bhajagovindam. He himself worshipped Krishna. The family deity of Shankaracharya is Krishna. And Shankaracharya is incarnation of Lord Shiva. If you go to Kaladi, birthplace of Shankaracharya, his family deity is Krishna. He worshipped Krishna. And he wrote the Achyutashtakam. When he was flying over to his place for meditation, he was flying over Guruvayur. Then immediately Guruvayur, Krishna's deity, is there. So he made Shankara just fall down. He lost all his yogic powers. As soon as he fell down, he glorified with Achyutashtakam. And he stayed there and worshipped Krishna. If you read Shankaracharya's personal writings, they are more than his impersonal writings. They are more. The quantity of his personal writings, devotional writings, they are more in number than his impersonal writings. His impersonal writings are only his Vedanta and Bhagavad Gita and one more book. That's all. Yeah.
That's all.
I cannot talk much about that thing, what, because I don't know much about their life and all these things.
Because that's why they
are missing. Yeah.
They might have been chosen for
doing. Do you think Lord Ramchandra will come to somebody's house just like that? Lord Ramchandra and Agastya, there's a nice wonderful description in Ramayana. And Agastya told Ramchandra, you stay in Panchavati. Agastya is a great sage, a great rishi. But it is for sure that we don't say that they are like pure devotees, like acharyas and all. No, they are great rishis, great sages. So,
this all great rishis, they wrote all these sutras for certain level, for certain level of consciousness. Of people,
yes, yes,
who
yes.
Have certain level.
Yes.
Same like Jesus or Muhammad comes.
Gave some religious principles.
But they are more than their doctrine.
But Jesus and Muhammad, they are not. They had a concept of personal God. But their level is fear and expectation. Isn't it? You don't find much of philosophy in them about creation. They just say, and they did not give the entire thing. But here, they are not talking about personal God, they are talking about atheism and all.
But at least Patanjali gives a practice.
Yeah, some practice. Okay, going back to our subject here. Yama, restraints. We'll just go on reading about what he talks about, restraints. To fulfill the above conditions, Patanjali Yoga begins with the prescribed physical code designed to calm one's relationship with oneself and others. The first two limbs of Patanjali Yoga, Yama and Niyamas, consists of 10 commitments and that constitute this code. 5 Yamas and 5 Niyamas. They replace animalistic urges with saintly virtues and thus break the 4 legs of Dharma, or sinful life. Now, when the fundamental principle which Patanjali actually gives about following Yama and Niyama is to substitute negative virtues is positive virtues. Suppose somebody is greedy. Now, how do you get rid of greed? By charity. So in that sense, he has spoken a lot and he's done a lot of good to the society in that sense. Vyasa used a lot of purports. and he quotes from Dharma Shastras and many places about these things. How to develop these virtues? How to develop these characters? Ahimsa. Now somebody has to be, Patanjali says Ahimsa. How do you develop Ahimsa? By developing compassion. When you have compassion, automatically Ahimsa is followed. So there are negative virtues in us, negative qualities in us. When you replace with the corresponding positive virtue, then these qualities develop. So especially, there are many value education, moral codes, ethical codes. There can be lot of things can develop from this particular thing. Something can be brought from here. Sahimsa literally means non-injury or non-violence. Generally one thinks non-violence as merely restraining from physical act of violence. But in yoga scriptures, non-violence is to be practiced in thought, speech and action. All three. Satya. According to Patanjali Yoga, one should be truthful to oneself and to others in thought, speech and action. The yoga student is taught to speak what he thinks, to do what he says. Sometimes one lies without awareness and sometimes just for fun or sake of creating gossip. The simple lies are the very seed that create habits that will one day become one's nature. Thus one cannot even trust in himself because of his untruthful nature. The day a person becomes totally truthful, his whole life becomes successful and whatever he says or thinks comes true. It's truth. Like if somebody becomes truthful, he, according to the Patanjali and Dharma Shastra, Vajjimalki also, a truthful, if he has practiced truthfulness, he becomes, whatever he says, it is known as Vaksiddhi. Vaksiddhi means he has gets the power that to give Shapa. He speaks, that will happen. So there is nothing so spiritual in it, but it is one. That is why those who are very chaste, those who are truthful, those who follow Brahminical principle of truthfulness, people are afraid. People are very much afraid of them. Anything comes out of them, it will happen. So in India, generally the Brahmins, other people, they are very much afraid of the Brahmins. Because if a Brahmin gets angry or they say something, that will happen to me. So I should be very careful. Satya. Asteya. Non-stealing provides a great opportunity for the practice of non-attachment and non-possessiveness. Actually, non-stealing is a negative explanation of contentment. Because when one is self-satisfied, he is not tempted to desire other things. Such a person considers whatever he has sufficient and he does not allow himself to be enslaved by lust and greediness in order to attain desired objects by intelligent means. The yoga system devises the non-stealing be practiced mentally, verbally and physically. An honest author writes original thoughts and if some material is borrowed from others, honestly and respectfully give references. This is an example of non-stealing at the thought level. In the same way, non-stealing practice at every level of personality helps maintain purity of life. And purity of life allows one to shine and grow in all directions. So just see, Patanjali has mentioned so many principles for developing character to be a good man. Brahmacharya. Brahmacharya literally means to act in Brahman. But here, according to Patanjali, Brahmacharya doesn't mean not to act on Brahman. For him, Brahmacharya means to completely abstain from sexual thoughts and sexual actions and sexual words. Patanjali takes Brahmacharya in a wider sense to mean selectively performing only those activities that are helpful in achieving the highest goal of life. Brahmacharya is possible only when the mind is free from sensuous desires, especially sexual urge, which is most powerful and which can be most destructive not directed and challenged properly. Illicit sexual activity dissipates vital energy that is to be utilized for the attainment of higher consciousness. For achieving this goal, the yoga system advises one to organize all his sensory forces and utilize them for proper and beneficial way. It teaches control of sensual cravings in order to attain the inner peace and happiness in the great. Uncontrolled senses weaken the mind, and weakened mind has no capacity to concentrate in one direction and or on one object. A person with a mind weakened by lust fails to think properly, to speak properly, to act properly. For higher attainment, one therefore withdraws his energies from the petty charms and temptations of sensory objects and convert the flow of life force to higher consciousness. So Brahmacharya is spoken at length in Patanjali Yoga Sutras. Na parigraha, non-possessiveness is generally misunderstood to mean denying oneself all material possessions, but the world actually indicates an inner attitude rather than outer behavior. The feeling of possessiveness is an expression of dissatisfaction, insecurity, attachment and greed. One who strives his whole life to gain more and more worldly objects is never satisfied because the desire can never be quenched. So in this way, non-possessiveness is spoken so much. So we want to go further because we have to finish a lot of things. For further niyamas, shaucha, cleanliness, we all know about it. What is the meaning of cleanliness? One should follow very clean. Santosha means to be satisfied. We all know. Tapas means to do, Prabhupada says, tapasya means to accept those things which are accepting some bodily and mental discomfort. That's the tapasya, same thing. Swadhyaya. Swadhyaya means to study Vedic literatures. For him, study means study his sutras. And then, fifth one, Ishwara Pranidhana. Now, this is where it talks. Surrender to God. Surrender to the Supreme Being is the best method for protecting oneself from dangers of attachment, false identification, and idea of I and the doer. Surrender is possible through cultivation of faith and devotion to the Lord within the heart. So they talk about this. But for them, the Lord is what? Imaginary. Just you see, the Lord is there. God is there. Don't worry. All these things are just imaginary God. There's a famous saying, Prabhupada talks about it. Like two, I should have quoted the example when I spoke about God. The child is very naughty. And the mother is not able to control the child. Then the mother tells the child, "Hey, how is coming?" Child becomes very afraid. "Oh, how is coming?" So I become disciplined. Now actually, they say, quoting this example, the atheistic people, like this mother imagined of something called how or something like that and created an impression in the mind of the child that that thing is going to come. So being afraid of that how, the child becomes disciplined. So for the sake of making the child disciplined, the mother has created how in the same way to create discipline among people. People have created God. Like Patanjali, in the same way to discipline the mind, he has created one God who actually is not there. No, I'm just explaining this point. Because Prabhupada gives his example in one place. Like Krishna, Yashoda also did the same thing. That how Vilav is there? Nandagam? I don't know whether how Vilav is something is there. But just to make Krishna afraid of. Fearful that hey, something is going to come. But they really made the how Vilav. Now asana. After practicing yama and niyama, then do asana. Let's see what this asana is all about. Asana, physical postures ensure physical health and mental harmony. They are used in conjunction with yama and niyama and other limbs of Patanjali. For without other elements of system, mere physical exercise cannot provide this desired benefit. The postures are broadly divided into two categories. There are two categories of postures. One is for the physical well-being, other is the meditational postures. The commentators and Patanjali Sutras mention only a few postures that are helpful in meditation. But later yoga scriptures describe a complete science of postures for physical and mental well-being. There are 84 classical postures, but only 4 of these are suggested for practice of meditation. They are Sukrasana, the easy pose, Swastikasana, the auspicious pose, Padmasana, the lotus pose, and Siddhasana, the accomplished pose. There are 4 asanas. Anybody knows these 4? You know 2. Padmasana? Two. Padmasana, you will know. And easy pose is this thing, normal, where we are sitting. And Swastikasana, in the way Bhakti no Thakur used to sit. That's what. See this pose. This is how he sits. This is a good Swastikasana. And Siddhasana, I don't know. I never went to any yoga schools. Many yoga teachers come and tell, Roji, tell any service is there, we'll come and teach yoga to all your devotees. Then I tell them that we'll teach yoga to you, bhakti yoga. Next, pranayam. Control of vital forces. Okay. In all meditative postures, the emphasis is on keeping the head, neck and trunk straight. The spine being aligned provides steadiness and comfort in the postures and minimize consumption of oxygen. Pranayama. After practicing physical exercises, the student becomes aware of a deeper level of personality, prana, the life force functioning in the body. The prana is derived from the Sanskrit root word ana and prasix of pra. Ana means to animate or vibrate. Pra means first unit or the prefix, prakrishta rupena. Thus the word prana means the first unit of energy. So it is like this, pra, prakrishta rupena, anaha. Ana means to move. In this world, everything is moving because of prana. Like we have pranavayus. So when the death happens, so what happens at the time of death? What people say? Traditionally, they don't say die. They say iska prana chala gaya. His pranas have gone. So a kind of modern science, modern medicine, oh, they say vitamins have gone, iron is gone, because it's very gross. But Vedic Vedas, they have a better understanding of the prana. And Patanjali, he gives a very elaborate description about this pranavayus. And he borrows all these things from Ayurveda. Ayurveda is the original text where prana is defined and prana is explained. Ayurveda. And Patanjali, he talks about these pranas and then says of controlling the pranas or the airs are very important for your proper health. And based on this, Patanjali yoga system and Ayurveda prana, there is something called pranic healing also. Somebody who has lot of control over his pranas, when somebody comes in front of him who is diseased, disease means his pranas are not functioning properly in his body. He takes his prana within in his body and balances them and gives back to him. It's called pranic healing. So though it is not a part of our sixth sense of philosophy and study and all, but we should understand, have some knowledge about prana. Prabhupada also talks about prana while talking about the soul. He says, the soul is floating in the region of the heart within the 5 kinds of airs. And this air, the prana, is a very important subject matter for study. And to have some general knowledge about prana is very important, because how the world is functioning. The world is functioning because of the prana vayus. Like to connect one thing to other, we use ropes, isn't it? But Krishna, when he designed this world, he used the air ropes. These air ropes are called prana. Now, we have these connections. How everything is there because of prana. Now this gravitational theory and all theory fails. It is all because of the ropes. The soul, or the consciousness, chitta, is connected to the subtle body because of prana. The subtle body is connected to the gross body because of prana. Whenever there is disturbance in the vayus, then there is sickness. So Patanjali, he gives a very elaborate description about how by pranayam you should control the pranas. In the pranayam there are three parts and Prabhupada talks about it. Rechaka, Prechaka and Kumbhaka. That is breathing in air, breathing out, holding the air for some time and breathing out air. Here we are not, I'm not here to teach Patanjali Yoga systems and pranayam because I myself don't know about this. So the purpose of breathing is the difference or the gap between two breaths. If you increase by practice of pranayam, you can increase your lifespan. Because the time of birth, what is the thing which is decided about you, how long you are going to live is, these are the number of times you are going to breathe. That is what is decided. It is not these many years you live. That is why those who engage in sense gratification, they had to breathe more. That is why they die faster. So, while yoga system, what happens, it makes you breathe. And there are some yogis, I saw one yogi who did not breathe even for 5 hours. Just like this, no breathing goes on. He is alive. He is able to live for long years. If you go to Kumbh Mela, you will find many yogis like that. You see, you saw those yogis, there are somebody who, one of the brahmacharis who went to Kumbh Mela long time back in Prayag, in Allahabad. He met a yogi who was living for 300 years, still. He is 300 years old. He developed some friendship with him. He was a short, thin, he just starts talking to him. Generally they don't talk. He saw a devotee and he knows about Prabhupada and all it seems. This yogi knows about Prabhupada. And he says, I am living for 300 years. He only comes for Kumbh Mela. And otherwise he is in Himalayas. So how they live? Because of pranayama. So these are yogis. Okay, I don't want to go through the whole description of prana. Now we'll talk about the 5 pranas. Just go to the next page. Prana, apana, samana, udana, vayana. And Prabhupada also talks about that, so you should have some more information about them. If you want to know more about it, better read Ayurvedic text rather than Patanjali text. Ayurveda talks about kapha pitta vata. Vata is nothing but these kinds of airs. Yeah, we should not read this page. Some information. If you want detail, better just consult Ayurvedic texts. Not required. Prabhupada says by chanting your pranas are automatically. You chant, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur told, by chanting at the level of Namabhas, the pranas come under complete control. What to speak of Shuddha Nam? Namabhas is enough. Namabhas is enough to get rid of all the diseases in our body. And that is it's not a primary goal. Anybody chanting at the level of Namabhas will not have any problem. Physical, neither physical nor mental. Abhas has this power. Pranas here is used to digest a specific, designate a specific type of prana, the vital force of inspiration. In this context, the word prana, that which draws in and takes in, life force that receives a fresh cosmic vitality from the atmosphere, activating the diaphragm, lungs and nostrils is called prana. See, prana is actually there in this universe. Krishna has given this prana vayu. There is a statement in the Vedas, Andam Pindadehasya. Andam Pindadehasya means, this Brahmanda, Anda means Brahmanda, is made exactly like your body is made. The functioning of your body is the same as the functioning of the cosmos. Functioning of the cosmos. Like when you go, when the Brahmins, when they go for passing, so they keep their Brahmin thread to the right ear. But it is said in the Mahapurusha, in the universal cosmic body of Krishna, through the right ear Ganga flows. The same thing, the functionality is the same. in the cosmic functionality and this body function is the same. So, and we, the energy, the pranas which are in the akasha, when we eat food, when we breathe, these two things are very important. What is the thing which actually goes inside our body, makes us live? Is eating and food. So in through the food, prana goes, and through the air, the prana goes. We know that there are many people who can live without eating, just by breathing, because they have the capacity to take the prana from the, just by breathing.
Oh, a lot of such people.
Yeah. And in the age of Kali, we don't have the capacity. That is why it is said that annagata prana. In the age of Kali, annagata prana means we can only derive prana through anna. That is why we go for hunting for food. In the earlier days, the yogis used to live for thousands of years without eating anything. Why? Because they had the capacity to derive prana from the cosmic prana, just by breathing. From there they can derive prana. Now, according to Patanjali, we can live without food, but not without air. So, he concentrates more on air and then talks about pranayama so much. Yeah.
So they're practicing. I was reading this book. It's amazing what they're doing. For a few months, they're not eating, no food, no water, and feeling very good. And it's increasing, developing, especially in Russia. One lady, for last 10 years, she's a simple lady. For 10 years, she didn't eat in Ukraine, in Dnipropetrovsk. She lives without eating nothing and drinking nothing, and doctors became very agitated by this. They took your body and ultrasound diagnostic, this X-ray disease.
Okay.
The functioning is very good.
Okay. So that means Patanjali is true in this sense. Now going further, I'm tired of reading all this stuff. Go further. No, I don't read. I can read fast. Why I printed all these things? Just to show that Patanjali has written all these things. We go further. Apana. Apana is excretory vital force. Apana vayu. Constipation. Anybody has got some constipation? So apana vayus are not functioning properly. So it's excretory organs. And now the samana is a digestive and assimilating force. It goes horizontally in our body. Actually this vata, this airs, we have to show a little bit knowledge about Ayurveda is good. How and why we should cover the ears. And this fan is a bit dangerous thing because it creates vata, increases our vata in our sharira. And in the morning we start sneezing because whole night we just kept the fan in full. So all these things are there in Ayurveda. Samana, digestive things. And udana means energy that uplifts, goes up. Like vomiting, it happens because of udana vayus. Something which body doesn't want, udana vayus just bring it out. Vayana is the contractile vital force. All rhythmic and non-rhythmic contractions takes place because of vital force. Contractions like eyes closing and necks like this, ankle, throat, all the movements of different angas of the body, it happens because of this. Okay, going further, food and breath are the main vehicles through which prana enters the body. Food contains a grosser quality of prana than does the breath. One can live for a few days without food, without breath one cannot function normally for a minute. This is the reason that yoga system plays so much importance for science of breath. Okay, we'll go next. Pratyahara, next topic. The fifth link of yoga system is pratyahara, the withdrawal of the control of the senses. Oh. Explain briefly what is pratyahara. Pratyahara means the tongue requires food, the skin requires touch, the eyes requires form to see, and the ears requires nice music to hear. So these five tanmatras, the Shabda, Rupa, Rasa, Gandha and all these things, they are like the food for the senses. Pratyahara means to refrain the senses from the sense objects. That is why this process is very artificial. To refrain, to keep them away. I don't want to see beautiful things. I don't want to hear nice music. I will not hear. I will not taste nice things. That's why it's very, very difficult. Or very... Now, next after this pratyahara comes dharana. In, yeah.
There is a state of when the senses become actually disconnected, the consciousness becomes disconnected from the outside objects. That's called pratyahara. When this stage comes, when the consciousness withdraws from the outer world?
Consciousness being withdrawn from the outer world is actually samadhi. Mm-hmm. Because this is a stage before dharana. He has not started meditation now, still. He is only building a ground for meditation. So, pratyahara, what you are talking is actually samadhi. Still, otherwise, if the consciousness is withdrawn from the external world, then dhyana and dharana and dhyana, they don't have any value. They don't have any significance. So here, pratyahara is clear like this. Just read that thing. Oh, here Patanjali goes to a deep extent because I have so much of... I can speak a lot on this, but not interested in speaking this because it's too materialistic. It's like giving Ayurvedic class.
Pratyahara is an artificial method.
Artificial, yeah. Patanjali defines pratyahara as withdrawal of senses from their objects and their establishment in mind. The senses are constantly wandering from one object to another, and the mind is also wanders with them. Although the mind is more subtle than the senses, like it is like this. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, what is that verse? Indriyanam hi charatan yan manonu vidhiyate tadasya harati prajna vayur nami vambasi. Take that verse. From that I'll try to explain pratyahara, what is. Now there Krishna clearly says, Indriyanam hicharatam yan manonu vidhiyate. Mana anuvidhiyate. Take that thing. Mana means mind. Wherever the mind focuses on, that is where the senses become active. For example, somebody is watching some movie, very nice, and is totally engrossed. At that time, somebody brings a plate of nice, wonderful food. Then what happens? He is watching the movie, but he is eating. Though he is seeing, mind's focus is there now. So he's not able to see properly. You can only see a thing or hear a thing not by eye. It is only by the mind. Until unless the mind focuses on a particular thing, you will not have the experience of the particular sensory organ or sensory touch. It is not possible. It is the mind. It is like a bulb or something like that. If it focuses through the eye, only those things which are seen by the eye, even though other senses are right open, it is not perceiving anything. So according to Patanjali, pratyahara means this. Not to focus the mind onto the sense object through the senses. Now, Patanjali also talks about this thing. Pratyahara means, for example, somebody gets hurt on the leg. If you get hurt on the leg, then you are feeling the pain. Withdraw your focus of the mind on the leg. Then the pain will subside gradually. Like, to give another example, a small baby, or just about maybe 1 or 2 year old baby, while playing gets hurt. Small, little bit. Starts crying. Mother, she comes and then gives a toy to the baby. So now the baby stops crying. Now what happened? The wound is not still there. The pain is still there. But the child's mind, the baby's mind's focus is where? Unto the toy. So, something like this. This is actually known as Pratyahara. So I think I conveyed my message. I'm not really speaking elaborately on these things because it's too materialistic. Otherwise, I'll go to Ayurveda and I'll go to some other subject. It's so vast and so deep. Just on Vata, how vayus function, how vayus have to be controlled, how you have to protect from Vata, and how Vata rogas have to be cured. It's all Ayurveda. I'm very much cautious not to go deep into that, because otherwise, again, I'll give an Ayurveda lecture here. It's not good. I'll leave this system of philosophy and give a lecture in Ayurveda. The best thing if you have Vata roga is to sit in the sun. There is no sun, what to do? Or drink. South India we have this tilka tel oil. What is the til? Sesame. Yeah, drink. All Vata roga is gone. All, what is it? Arthritis, and this itis, any Vata roga. It's gone. You serve the cows, Vata roga is gone. All Vata. Any pain in the body is because of Vata. 70% disease is because of Vata. And it is not cured by just pranayama. You do the pranayama, and also you had to take help of these things. Heart attack is because of Vata roga. You want me to speak on all these things or what? So don't drag me. So now going further, dharana. Dharana means having withdrawn the senses and the mind from the external object. The mind must then carry a single thought pattern in a desired direction. Now you have withdrawn the mind from all the sense objects. Though it's there, you are refrained from them. Then you have to concentrate the mind on one particular object. So now, according to Patanjali, you can select anything. Anything in this world. It may be a wristwatch, it may be a fan, it may be your own, this thing, your heart, or you can, the tip of the nose, at the tip of the tongue, at the tip of the chin, dhruvor madhye, or between the eyes, you will select anything. Of course, Vyasa gives certain things by doing so, you'll get certain siddhis. But anything, it can be. It's just a materialistic object, that's all. So now, to concentrate, he gives 5 principles for better concentration. Generally, I take a course on concentration and memory and use those 5 principles. Just I just enter the school and talk to children about Krishna consciousness. Concentration and memory. A small piece of paper on that. So these principles are used for that. First is interest. If you don't have interest in an object, you cannot concentrate on. First you should like something. Object you should have interest in it. Second is it should be practiced regularly. You should think of that thing every day, sit and then just concentrate, meditate on that particular object. For example, setting a specific time, choosing a favorable environment, keeping a proper diet, regular sleep makes it easier to concentrate the mind. These are the practices which you should do. Kainwal japa. Every day if you sit at the same place and do the japa, your japa will be nice. and environment. It's very nice things which he has given here. And breathing, using the same straight, steady and comfortable seated posture. Every time one practices using smooth, deep and regular diaphragmatic. Yeah, this is diaphragm, no? Yeah. Breathing patterns help one keep the mind and body calm, it alert. Detachment, a calm mind is necessary for a student to practice this concentration. So, when the student practices concentration, advise not to exert undue effort because it leads to tension, and tension dissipates and disturbs the nervous system and senses as well as the mind. So, we should concentrate on the sound while chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. But it should not be like this, all this, and do all, and one day you get mad. Chanting is the most simple and a very relishable and enjoyable thing. I just try. Making so many faces like this. So many ladies. I don't know who is going to explain to such people. So, and if somebody sees such people chanting, would they be like shocked? So it leads to tension, depression, and nervous breakdown. Somebody asked, you know, the class, Prabhuji, how should I chant? Chant. Simply chant. In Hare Krishna, saying something wrong, how should I chant? This is simply chant. Hear what you are chanting, that's all. There are various kinds of concentration, gross and subtle, outer and inner, subject and objective. According to Vyasa's commentary in Yoga Sutras, one can concentrate internally on some point within the body, such as cardiac center, the base of the bridge between the nostrils, or the tip of the tongue, and one can concentrate externally on the selected object. If the object of concentration is present, beautiful, interesting, easy for the mind to focus on in a long time. Using a mantra or the breath of the object of concentration is considered to be the best method for learning to focus the mind on. Mind one-pointedly in preparation for attaining a meditative state. Now next is dhyana. The difference between dharana and dhyana is, one example is enough to show that. One is, you have a glass of water, if you pour it, the flow of water down is wavering. Okay? If you take a glass of oil and then pour it, the oil, taila dhara, means the oil, it flows very smoothly like this. So meditation on that object of the meditation, what you're doing, when it is wavering, that is called dharana. When it is perfect, that is called dhyana. As simple as that. So example is given in this paragraph about the river. So Patanjali goes and gives this example actually. In the initial stage, the river is flowing here, there, in the mountains, the rocks are coming, there's so much of wavering here and there. But once it enters the plains, till in the mountains, the flow of river is considered to be dharana. After it comes to the plains, it is known as dhyana. And the river enters this ocean, that is samadhi. So he gives an initial process of meditation that is known as this. Now, samadhi, then the mind is in a state beyond the concept of language in which it is accustomed to think or produce modifications. Samadhi is a state beyond thinking and feeling. In this, individual soul is linked to the Supreme Soul. In samadhi, one casts away all limitations and causations and enjoy eternal bliss and happiness. So this samadhi, two kinds of samadhi already described about it. Now, Patanjali talks about one point about samyama. This is what dharana, dhyana and samadhi. Dharana, dhyana and samadhi put together is called samyama. During this time of these three things, what happens is you will get lot of powers. Lot of powers. They are called siddhis. Let us see what these siddhis are. Just go through those things. Patanjali uses the term samyama to describe the combined stage of concentration, meditation and samadhi. According to Patanjali, one can achieve whatever one wants to through the practice of samyama because it expands human potentials and allows one to explore higher and higher states of consciousness. Through the practice of samyama, it is said that one can develop supernatural powers of perfection called siddhis, which are described in the third chapter yoga. Third chapter yoga is known as Vibhutipada. Because the body is a miniature presentation of the cosmos. Body is a miniature presentation of the cosmos. Sanskrit for it is Andam Pinda Dehasya. Just now I spoke about it. Whatever exists in the cosmos is present in the body. Microcosm and macrocosm being one, an individual can thus have access to the powers of the universe. The practice of samyama upon any object brings perfection regarding the object. By practicing samyama on latent mental impressions, sanskars, for example, can one realize the content and achieve the knowledge of the previous births. If you concentrate on the sanskars, then you can come to know what you have done in the previous life. How many of you want to know what happened in the previous life? You want to know? You also want to know. Everybody wants to know. Athado brahma jigyasa. Atato purvajam janma jigyasa. Now I therefore should inquire what happened in the previous life. The person who killed you in the previous life is your wife now. So it is good we don't remember the previous life. Isn't it? It is by actually Vyasa, when he talks about Vedanta, he talks about three states of consciousness. All the Vedanta Sutras starts with the three states of consciousness and then talks about the fourth one. That is Sushupti, Swapna, Jagrata. While talking about that, it is the mercy of the Lord that we forget. There, the forgetfulness is spoken about. The forgetfulness is actually mercy of Krishna. Matta smritir jnana apohana. Matta smritir jnana apohanam cha. Apohana means forgetfulness. So forgetfulness is good. But the point is, you forget those things which are supposed to be remembered, and you remember those things which are supposed to be forgotten. He told me that this person did this thing to me. Aray, what is this? Forget. You should remember Krishna. Instead of that, you forget exactly those things. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that asochyano sochastum prajnavadam shabhasati nanu shochitum arhasi. The word arhata means qualified. So nanu shochitum arhasi. So don't think about those things which are not fit to be thought about. Don't remember those things which are not fit to be remembered about. So that's, you should be very careful about it. So the practice of samyama, it is said that one can develop, microcosm, yeah. The practice of samyama upon the object of objects bring perfection regarding that object. By practice samyama on the latent mental impressions, sanskars, for example, one can realize their content and achieve knowledge of the previous births. By practice of samyama on the navel center, one can understand the entire physiology. Just meditate on the navel center, physiology. This is one of the siddhis. By the practice of samyama on the throat center, one can eliminate hunger and thirst. That we don't want to do. We want to have prasad, isn't it? By the practice of samyama on the distinction between purusha and prakriti, one can attain knowledge of purusha, the supreme consciousness. Many other kinds of supernatural powers such as enhanced powers of sight, sound, smell, touch, taste and powers of minuteness, lightness, greatness and lordship also mentioned. One who attains these partial perfections still has to go beyond these charms and temptations. This is most important. One has to go beyond these charms and temptation to establish himself in a state of perfect samadhi. So many things come. when you are doing yoga. So be careful. Like when you become an ISKCON devotee, so many things come. People respect you, people do things. These are all the siddhi. Prabhupada are all the siddhis. All siddhis. Devotees get siddhis like this. But by practicing yoga, you get these siddhis. But Patanjali says you should not be attracted by these siddhis. Naturally, a yogi gets these powers by dhyana, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. These three processes known as samyama. Now, ultimately, summarizing, what does he say about God? We have already spoken about it. God is only an imaginary thing in Patanjali Yoga Sutras. He says, universal consciousness is the source of everything. God is not the source of everything. As Nyaya say, atoms, Vaisheshika says, combination of atoms is the source of everything. Sankhya say, material nature is the source of everything. Yoga, Patanjali says, universal consciousness, all pervading universal consciousness. Chit Shakti Riti. Chit Shakti Riti, that's all. For him, the source is Chit Shakti, that's all. And other things are all only accepted from Sankhya philosophy, Purusha and Prakriti. He just puts a God there, who is anyhow not the source, not the controller, only just guides Purusha and Prakriti to come together. And that is only, and he doesn't become bound like other Purushas, other Jivas. But anyhow, he is not the source. So what question, what kind of God, God they accept? And that's all. So this is what Patanjali has got to say. That is why Vyasa says, Nastika, we reject him. Yes.
Does he say imaginary God?
Oh, he doesn't say it's an imaginary God,
yeah.
But he imagines a God.
And does he define in any way?
No, he doesn't. It is something like this. I am talking about something imaginary. I don't say it is imaginary. But it is imaginary. Just because I don't say it is imaginary, that doesn't mean it is not imaginary. So Patanjali's concept of God is imaginary God. And as we have proved, this one page at the end, the last page of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Tattva Viveka. This is direct printout from Tattva Viveka. It's not my notes. It's directly the last page. You can take this page and talk to those people who has a little bit of doubt about Patanjali being a devotee, Patanjali being a theistic person. Forget devotee, theistic. Who has doubt even by practicing Patanjali Yoga, you can realize Paramatma? No, for sure. By practicing the yoga taught by Krishna in the 6th chapter, you will realize the real Paramatma. Who is there? Krishna. And at that time, that yogi knows that it is Krishna who is as Paramatma. Like Sukadeva Goswami was Brahman realized. Was he not knowing Krishna as Supreme Lord? Okay, four Kumaras. The four Kumaras are Brahman realized. Were they not knowing that Narayana is the Supreme Lord? They were knowing, but their attraction was for Brahman. The genuine yogis who follows the yoga of devotional yoga, they know Krishna is Supreme Lord. Because of the lack of association of a pure devotee, their attraction is for Paramatma. This we are going to talk tomorrow when you talk about Vedanta. When you talk about Vedanta, there is a clear distinction between Brahmavadis and Mayavadis. There is a clear distinction between the Paramatmavadis and the Mayavadis. Mayavadis are a very dangerous class. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Mayavad Bhasha Sunle Sarvanash. But Brahmavadis, Mayavadis are Krishna Paradis. Whereas Brahmavadis and Paramatmavadis are not Krishna Paradis. Because of lack of association, like Prabhupada says, by the association of a pure devotee, Brahmavadis and Paramatmavadis becomes bhaktas. Like Sukadeva Goswami, by the association of Vyasa's Bhagavatam, he became a devotee. That is only external to show people. Like the four Kumaras, by the association of Tulasi Devi, they became pure devotees of the Lord. Otherwise, they are Brahmavadis. And Brahmavadi is very, very rare. Paramatmavadi is also very, very rare. Any more doubts about it?
So this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's book, Tattva Viveka.
Tattva Viveka.
If published, we can read it.
Yes. Okay? So yoga is over. Now evening, yajnas. We'll do yajnas. Karma mimamsa. Mimamsakas. They are the most difficult to defeat. And Karma Mimamsas, they have written 2672 sutras. Patanjali Yoga, they are all only repeated to 400, 500 maximum. Vedanta Sutra is also 500. But this Karma Mimamsa is the most difficult to defeat. Most dangerous also. Because they are materialistically theistic and Vedic. But still not understanding the purpose of life. Evening, talk about.
How many sutras there are to
Evening, I'll tell you. 2672.